This is The Golf Show on 710 ESPN Seattle. Brought to you by Fairway Independent Mortgage of Seattle. Now your hosts, Jim Moore and Sean Krug.
Good morning and welcome to The Golf Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We have a fun show planned for you today, and there's golf to watch. There's golf to be played this weekend here in the Seattle-Tacoma area and all across the state, but there's also golf to watch, and we're really looking forward to the two events that are planned for TV this weekend, the Champions for Charity match featuring Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady will take place at noon tomorrow on TNT, TBS, True TV, so you can check that out. It's going to be fun to see how Peyton Manning and Tom Brady handle the pressure in a different element than they're used to, but that should be a whole lot of fun, so check that out. Noon Sunday, TNT, TBS, True TV, and then also the Tiger Slam on Golf Channel tomorrow at 5 o'clock, that 10-month stretch. We all remember that when Tiger won every single major from 2000 to 2001, one of the most fantastic stretches in golf history. Golf Channel will cover all of that at 5 o'clock tomorrow, the Tiger Slam, another documentary after The Last Dance with Michael Jordan. Later in the show, we'll be talking to Brian Flagel. He's the Boeing Classic Tournament Director. He told us last week that the tournament's in a little bit of jeopardy. They need to have fans for the tournament to be held. We'll find out more from Brian Flagel what the situation is there with the Champions Tour event at Snoqualmie Ridge later in the show. But right now, we want to get started right away with Paul Tesori. You might not know who Paul Tesori is. I think you're going to enjoy this interview, though. He caddies for Webb Simpson, the number 9 player in the world golf ranking. And Paul Tesori he joins us now.
He's caddied for the likes of Vijay Singh, Jerry Kelly, and Sean O'Hare, and for the past decade has been on the bag for current world-ranked number 9, Webb Simpson. He and Simpson have shared some big moments, including wins at the 2012 U.S. Open and 2018 Players' Championship, along with appearances at both the Ryder Cup and President's Cup. A former All-American for the Florida Gators who briefly had his own stint on the PGA Tour, we're thrilled to welcome to the Golf Show Jim Moore and Sean Krug, Paul Tesori. Paul, it's great to have you on with us today. Thanks so much.
John, thanks for you and Jim having me on. During these last couple of months, anytime I have a chance to geek out on golf a little bit and talk about the game I love, I have tried to take that opportunity. So I look forward to having a little fun today.
Well, normally you and Webb would be in the mix of everything happening on tour right now. How have you been spending these last couple of months?
Besides driving my wife absolutely up a wall, everything else has been pretty low-key. We have had my son Isaiah, who's 6, has Down syndrome, so he's in kind of that higher risk category. So we've been in quarantine since March 13th, and Michelle's mom and aunt were here, and so we had to take a little extra special care of them. But I have been cheating and scooting away 2 days a week to go play some golf. Our courses have remained open. It's 1 to a cart, Penn stay in, no rates, and to be honest with you, it's been really, really nice. Pace of play has been fast. The weather has been great. And I think it's been good for everybody to have me out of the house a little bit. I like to do too many things, and I'm not that good at all of them. And I can definitely drive some people a little crazy. So those 2 days a week have been a good reprieve for everybody.
Yeah, I think we can relate to that, Paul. I think I'm probably driving my wife crazy, but guess what? She's driving me nuts too. So when you guys come back without fans, when the tour resumes in June, what do you think that's going to be like?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little bit of premeditated change of the game plan that you usually have. Fans, especially for the guys at that level, they're instrumental when things are just blah. When you're playing average or you're even par or one under, one over, whatever you are, and, you stuff that approach shot or you make a putt, and you kind of get that little jolt of energy from the fans. I think that's going to be the time where we're going to have to come up with a game plan on what to do a little bit different, how to change our talk, how to maybe add a little bit of energy ourselves. I think if the guys are playing good, I don't really think the fans will have that much impact on the result. I do think for some of the younger guys, for some of the less experienced guys, these are going to be pretty massive 4 weeks for them to get off to some great starts. I remember when I did play on tour for my short while, the the bigger the crowds, kind of the more anxious I got, the more nervous I got, the less free I got. And I'm sure that a lot of young guys still go through that, maybe when the confidence isn't quite as high. So I think it could be really good for some of the young guys. And I think some of the older, more veteran guys, if they don't have their A game going, it could be a little bit of a detriment.
Well, Paul, speaking of younger players, if we roll back the clock back to the earlier days of your career, you had actually played professionally, 20 events, 9 of those on the PGA Tour. I know that you had decided fairly quickly that it wasn't the right fit. I want to say within a year or two. How did you end up pulling the trigger on that decision, and what made you decide that caddying might be the better direction?
Well, Sean, thank you for bringing that up, and you made it kind of sound even a little better than the probably truth is. Yes, I got out of college, and right away I had an okay college career, was fortunate to be a part of 2 team national championships, one in junior college and one at the University of Florida at 93, 3-time All-American. And people hear that like, wow, you were a stud. And the answer is no. My coach, Buddy Alexander, always said if there was a foxhole, he'd like to have me in it. And while that was a big compliment, at the same time, it also meant I was maxing out my potential. And anytime in sport, or really, I guess, in the professional realm as well, but the higher levels you go up, while hard work can get you a lot of places, a lot of heart can get you a lot of places, eventually, if the talent level's not quite enough, you're going to reach your max. And that's kind of what happened to me. I had a rotator cuff surgery in 1997, which was my first year on tour. And it took me off for about a year and a half. And when I came back, the shoulder was healthy, but the mind wasn't. And so my career had pretty much run its course, and I was always a little bit of a realist. I knew that my talent level already, I needed to be as healthy as I could and as strong-minded as I could. So it wasn't hard for me to walk away. And to be honest with you, caddy had never really entered my mind. I was teaching full-time in 2000, and the phone rang late in the summer of 2000, and it was VJ Singh, who had become a friend of mine. We used to play and practice together a lot at TPC Sawgrass here in Northeast Florida in Ponte Vedra. And he asked if I wanted to come out for a week and caddy, and I did, and hired me the next week, which was Jack's last PGA, where he almost holed the wedge shot on the last hole at Valhalla, and where Tiger was going for his 3rd straight major, and they were paired together. And I just remember that first time getting a sense of this massive energy that comes from these crowds and at the level that these guys were playing. And he asked me at the end of that week to caddy for him, and I didn't know if that was going to be what I was going to do forever until 2003, when I went to work for Jerry Kelly for a year and a half. We had a lot of success together, President's Cup team together. And I was like, okay, this is something I'm good at. I really enjoy kind of still being in the ropes, but sleeping well at night if you're leading a golf tournament, not worrying about those 3 and 4 footers the next day. So now here we are 20 years later, and we're still going.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me because you guys have to have all the yardages and help read putts and that type of thing. But what about the mental aspect of it? Because I would think that that's just as important, the emotional, mental part of being a good caddy as the yardages.
Yeah, for sure. I think we have to be a little bit of chameleon, depending on who you're working for. Everybody has their own needs and wants out of the caddy. You know, VJ didn't want a whole lot and didn't need a whole lot. I got him when he was 39 years old. He was just about to kind of start his little resurrection. He had 9 wins at the time. So he pretty much knew what he wanted, and he molded me into the caddy that he wanted, him obviously being my first boss. And I've still taken a lot of the stuff that I learned from Beach going forward. So Jerry was a little different. Jerry, you needed to kind of punch around a little bit. You needed to get him fired up a little bit. He was a guy, he's a hockey guy, so he kind of had that mentality. And so you needed to play on his competitiveness and his toughness. Sean O'Hare was my next guy. He was a young guy that just needed to be infused with confidence. So I would treat him differently than the other 2 guys. He needed to be lifted up a little bit and needed to believe in himself a little more. And then here came Webb, that he had this great head on his shoulders, just needed a little bit kind of tutoring as far as course management goes, how to play on the PGA Tour at that level, a little bit of building up and reminding him how good he was, but also just a few changes here and there mechanically. So I think each guy is very, very different. I think we see that all the time from week to week. You know, Jordan Spieth has a different demeanor on the golf course than, let's say, Tiger or Xander Schauffele or even a Webb Simpson. So it kind of changes one-to-one, but definitely the psychology of knowing when to speak, how to speak, what to say. It gets better and better the older you are, the more experience that you have. But anytime you start with a new guy, which thankfully I haven't had to do in the last 10 years now. I've been with Weber, but you have to kind of learn their MO, learn their heartbeat and what they need.
We're talking with veteran PGA Tour caddy Paul Desori on the Golf Show with Jim Moore and Sean Crew. Paul, you talk about these differences between Webb, Sean, VJ, and Jerry. Were there any similarities between them?
Well, yes, I think at the root of it, the thing that shocked me the most is that these guys would all go through slumps. And it seemed like when they came out of the slump, you never knew when the slump was going to end. And when they did, how quickly they would again believe in themselves. And in the midst of bad golf, and I think this is the same football, basketball, baseball, I actually would imagine even in, you know, the sales force, I would think it matters, or even in journalism, I would think that, you know, confidence goes a long way. And I think when they get in the mix and they haven't been in it in a while, very quickly you see that natural born winner's attitude come out. And I saw from each of them. I was fortunate enough to win with each of those guys, do President's Cup teams with each of these guys. And, you know, kind of the bigger the situation, the better they seem to perform. And a lot of times the things that they struggled the most with is when you're in that 45th place. You know, what do you do with that? How do you push forward? How do you still get the energy to go forward? And the older I've gotten, it's something that I struggle at as well in my job. That, and at the end of the year, when it's the difference between making the Ryder Cup team or President's Cup team or making the Tour Championship, it usually comes down to a point, which if you're battling for points, that could be one shot. It could be a shot when you're in 55th place or 60th place, just as much as when you're up in the top 10. So, you know, I think the biggest thing to answer your question, Sean, is just the fact that when they do get it back, when they start playing well again, it's just incredible to me how comfortable they fit back into being near the lead.
You mentioned Pawnee Bedford Beach. I have a hard time saying that, Paul, but you grew up there, and so you played there at TPC Sawgrass, the Island Green. I've read a story from Jeff Babineau about you, and you played that course 700, maybe 800 times. What is it about the Island hole? I always, you know, I'm looking at these guys, they're the best in the world, and the shot is, what, 140, 150, maybe 130 yes. yards, and yet yeah. it makes grown men buckle at the knees when they say. So what is it about that hole?
Yeah, a few things. I think even if you're not a golf fan, if you ask someone about the 17th hole at TPC, I'm sure they'd say, yeah, that Island Green. It's just one of those iconic holes that you know about. And there's something to be said about a hole that if you miss, it's in the water and you've got to hit it again. I don't want to go too deep, and I don't want to like try to play too much into people's heads, but you see some stats where there's been guys that haven't hit the ball in the water in 20 or 30 tries. Then you have other guys that seem to average once every four times around it that they hit the ball in the water. And so there's definitely a mental aspect and a barrier to get over. You know, they have the famous caddy contest there on Wednesday afternoon with a microphone. The shot's only 135 yards. There's no doubt. I mean, I'm shaking as I'm hitting the shot. And I use every excuse in the book. I've been carrying a bag for 16 holes. Oh, I haven't hit any balls. But it really doesn't have anything to do. It's just fear of looking like an idiot standing over the shot and hitting a poor golf shot. And I think for the pros, so much of it has to do with their eyes. You get used to seeing a certain shot from 140 yards that looks a certain way. Grass short of the green, a bunker left, a bunker long. And when you get there, it just really plays into this manipulation of your depth perception when you look up. It's surrounded by around 20,000 fans, and the shot ends up becoming a lot tougher. That green gets really, really firm and fast. If you land it on top with not enough spin, it'll trickle over. So there's a lot that goes on. You know, when we were able to win that golf tournament in 2018, we came in there just in the midst of what I believe, if we would have finished par, would have been one of the top three best rounds of golf that had ever been played on tour. We were 11 under through 16 in firm, fast conditions. The next lowest score that day was 4 under, and we hit it in the water. We got in between clubs, got wind gusts, hit the bulkhead, and trickled over the back. And I still remember this day feeling over that shot a nervous type of energy, which as a caddy, I really don't get nervous, but that day I was over that shot. And it'll definitely play mind tricks with you in a hurry.
Well, Paul, you've had a chance to be a part of some really big moments for Webb, including his 2012 U.S. Open win and both President's Cup and Ryder Cup appearances. But you were also on the bag for his 2018 Players' Championship win. With you growing up in the area and having played the stadium course so many times, I imagine it was pretty special seeing it all come full circle.
It definitely was. You know, people have the kind of question they get asked the most is, you know, was the 2012 U.S. Open win bigger than the 18 players win? And it's a little different answer, I think, as a caddy versus a player. But for me, it's not close, and it's the 2018 players. We had gone through 2.5 years of mighty struggle when the USGA made, you know, the ban on the anchoring band, the anchoring putter, which Webb had done for 11 years. He had fallen from a top 40 putter on tour to in the mid 170s. And in 2017 was over 190th on tour in putting. When, Tim Clark gave us a little piece of advice in 2017 about changing his right hand grip, and very quickly Webb started return to form. So when we won in 2018, it had been 4.5 years. We had gone through a lot of downs during that stretch. And again, for me, my grandfather and my dad taught me how to play the game here when I was 5 years old. So in 1977, I first walked on a golf course, a professional golf tournament in 1977 across the street at the Players Championship at Sawgrass Country Club. Mark Hayes won, which, so he grew up as my favorite player. And I laugh and joke, people always say, was Nicklaus your favorite player? Palmer, Watson, Trevino, Hogan, all these other guys. I'm like, no, it was Mark Hayes, and nobody's ever really heard of him. But for me, he had won my first time that I'd been out on the golf course. So, this area for me is everything. I still have mom, dads, aunts, uncles, cousins, sisters that live here. 2012, yeah, we had done one interview before we teed off on Sunday for the entire week, and bam, we won the golf tournament, where in 18 here at the Players, we had led wire to wire, answering the questions all week. And so just a tremendous amount of satisfaction that came out of that. At the end of the career, the U.S. Open win will obviously count a lot more for Webb's potential Hall of Fame career and in the stats. But for both of us, we've talked about 18 was just so sweet to be able to come back and get that win.
Veteran PGA Tour caddy Paul Tesori with us on the Golf Show with Jim Moore and Sean Crewe. Well, when it was initially announced that the anchored putting ban would be going into effect in 2016, Webb had been pretty outspoken about not agreeing with it. I know it took some time for him to work through it, but looking back, especially where he is right now, does it seem like it actually may have been a good thing?
Now, yes. Now with my feet up on a little table here looking at a lake house that the new putter has bought me, pretty much. And we've been able to be very fortunate enough to spend quarantine through. But like, it's been that tale of two halves. It was 2.5 years of dark times. Weber and I got in several arguments. We've shed some pretty deep tears together as we were trying to fight our way through. Just not being able to putt, dealing with anxiety, dealing with dealing with doing this on a national stage, had fallen to 100th in the world, had missed 3 straight team events. But now looking back, first of all, he's a much better putter now than he ever was before. And so that obviously gives you a ton of joy to know that you were able to fight through that and come out better on the other end. But also, I know it brought him and I closer together. I think it toughened Weber up. At the same time, he came out of that a tougher, a stronger, a lot more willpower. And so looking back and where we are today, definitely a positive. I guess in the moment we wouldn't have gone through that, but I don't think we win the Players, especially the way we do in 18 with the old method and what we're able to do this year at Phoenix, making those big putts down the stretch on 17 and 18 and then again in the playoff. I don't think we'd have been able to do that before with the belly putter. We still had some shaky moments, streaky moments with that other method. So definitely now looking back, I'll say that he's better off and we are better off than we ever were.
I love hearing about the caddy-player relationships. And I was just wondering how it is with you and Webb when you're out there, when you're thinking, man, you need to hit a 6 here, and he wants to hit a 7. And I'm hoping that when golf resumes, that they'll take advantage of this by miking up more players.
Yeah, I think, we're going to go back to that answer that you had asked me about earlier, was every player is different. Webb, he gives me a tremendous amount of freedom, which gives me a lot of confidence in my job. I'm given the freedom to make hard choices, hard decisions in the biggest moments, and if I'm wrong, my job's not on the line. And so let's start with that. Webb's a little bit of an anomaly. Joe Scobber, new caddies for Ricky Fowler, calls him the unicorn. He calls Webber the unicorn, which is, you hear that they exist, but you've never seen one. Webb constantly builds me up. He knows that the more confident I am, the the better product he's going to get out of me, which is going to benefit him. But going back to the first boss with Veej, you know, he was not quite that way. If you did speak up with Veej, he always said, he goes, Paulie, I want you to speak up. But if you do, I want facts to why you think what you think, and you better be right. And so just a little different commonality. So there was a lot more times with Veej that I kept my mouth shut when I could have spoken up. Now, I still spoke up on occasion when I really felt strongly. But if it was one of those that I was about, you know, 75% on, I would keep my mouth shut. If I was 90%, I was going to speak up. But with Weber, if I've got that 75%, I'm going to say, hey, bud, you know, have you thought about this? I'll word it differently. Now, if I'm 100% on one side, he's going to hear, hey, man, listen, it's only playing this. This is what the club is. Just rethink this with me real quick, and he'll usually see where I'm coming from and make that choice. So there's other guys. I just talked to a good friend of mine who works for another top player recently, and he had asked me what I go through, and I just said, hey, listen, I'm going to tell you what I used to go through, because what I go through now, it's not really realistic with the freedom that Webb gives me. So I kind of tell a few more of the VJ stories than I do the Webb stories to help some of the guys out.
Sean has asked you, Paul, about your greatest moment as a caddy out there. I'm going to ask you about your biggest screw-up. I mean, there must be one that you look back on and you go, oh, man, yes. If I had a do-over on this, what was that?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to start very, very early on. I have two answers. We're going to give the quick one and then a little longer one. So the first one was, it was my first full tournament caddying for BJ as his caddy. I'd caddied for him before, but, you know, hadn't been hired. And so we're over in Paris. We're playing in France. We get paired with Seve Ballesteros the first 2 days. Second day, we're on the 15th hole. Veej just hit a beautiful drive down there, and we got a great number, 111 yards to the hole. Bam, he hits this flush sand wedge right at it, and it comes up like 10 yards short. So he's got this 30-footer. He's like, man, that was really weird. I hit that the way he wanted. And I said, I thought you did too. I figured out I had subtracted 5 instead of added 5, whatever it was. So I was 10 yards off on my number. He flagged it. We hit it 30 feet. We end up two-putting. So I tell Veej right away, hey, bud, that's on me. This is what I did. And, you know, he's giving it. So the first thing Veej does is, of course, tell Seve, look at this. I just hired the guy. We're out on the bag for the first week, and look at what my man already did. And I still remember Seve shaking his head and kind of doing this, Paulie, I guess that's going to be a short job, huh, Veej? And they were messing with me by then. But that's something I've never forgotten. And then a little more famous big mistake I made was wearing Tiger Who, my third event caddy in my career. I wore a hat that said Tiger Who at the President's Cup in Virginia. It was meant to be a joke, a fun thing. Definitely did not come off that way by the time it was seen. Tiger still makes me retell the story every team event now, and he played a fun little practical joke on me. And this past year for the President's Cup and for Picture Day, him and Weber had on Paul Who, and all the cats had Paul Who written on the back of their other hat, all the caddies. So they had a good time getting me back. And, of course, Tiger's hat said Paul Who underneath it, 2-1, because that's what he beat us that day. So I would say if I could take anything back, it would be the Tiger Who hat, even though it is made for some really fun stories, you know, once the kind of truth got out about what it was supposed to be about and the fun and joy behind it. But I would say that'd be my answer.
Well, before we let you go, I know you and your wife, Michelle, started the Tesori Family Foundation a little more than a decade ago. It's amazing what you do and all of the different types of causes you support. Can you share a little bit more about your foundation?
Man, thank you so much, obviously, Sean, for asking that. This is, you hit on my sweet spot there for sure. Our foundation, you can look us up, TesoriFamilyFoundation.org. We have a bunch of different programs, but our main focus, my son was born in January of 2014 with Down syndrome, and we've kind of changed the focus of the foundation to the special needs community since Isaiah was born. We have a couple of favorite programs. Mine is the All-Star Kids Clinic, and what we do is we put 25 kids together with special needs between 8 and 18. We give them one-on-one instruction with PGA Tour players, coaches, and caddies, and we've got 20 throughout the country this year, which we're just so excited about. We team up with a local first tee. We do it mostly at the PGA Tour sites when we come into town. We have a couple that are off sites. We do one in Augusta, Georgia, and we do an extra one here in Ponte Vedra, and we're going to continue to expand those things as well. And it's just fun to watch these kids just be spoiled for a day. We spend an hour and a half with them, let them get some great swag at the end of it, but introduce them to the game that has been so good to me at the same time. And A bunch of other things we do. We do something here locally called Christmas Tree Angel, Hope for the Holidays. And we do 100 families where we buy presents for the parents and the kids. We buy them, we wrap them, and we deliver them to the St. Augustine Homeless Coalition and have them divvy them out to the families. But we get together, probably 100 volunteers. We drink a lot of coffee, a lot of cocoa, eat too many donuts, and we just shop. We pray about the families that we're giving them to and just try to make a difference. And during the coronavirus days here, during COVID-19, all the, obviously, food banks have been really, really low. So just we've spent our money and our time and our volunteer efforts really trying to focus on, just trying to feed the families right now that are going through just this awful time. So, again, check us out at storyfamilyfoundation.org. We have about 7 different programs right now. We've been able to get back about 1.6 million so far in our 10 years, and we're just going to continue to do that. We can't do it without all the volunteers and support and prayers. So thanks for bringing that up, and if anybody wants to check us out, we would love to have you.
Oh, Paul, that's so wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today. Jim and I really appreciate it.
Sean, love talking to you and Jim, and hopefully we'll get another big one done some point soon, and we'll talk again.
Our thanks to Paul Tesori, caddy for Webb Simpson, number 9 player in the world. If you want to follow Paul on Twitter, and after that interview, I mean, he's a fun guy to follow, at Paul Tesori, T-E-S-O-R-I. Our thanks, too, to Fairway Mortgage of Seattle, the Golf Show sponsor. Your house isn't just a place to live. It's an investment for you and your family's future. Fairway Mortgage of Seattle offers a diverse collection of loan programs and takes pride in meeting your unique financial needs. From conventional mortgages and jumbo loans to reverse mortgages and VA loans, Fairway Mortgage of Seattle does it all. Visit fairwayseattle.com. All right, coming up next, Michael Jordan. You probably all watched the Last Dance documentary on ESPN. We want to tell you all about his exclusive golf course. That's next on The Golf Show with Jim Moore and Sean Crew, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Considering purchasing or refinancing a home? Well, get ready for a bumpy ride with a lot of paperwork and stress unless you choose Fairway Independent Mortgage. Hi, this is Sean Crew. Using a smooth and nearly paperless process, Fairway will work hard to make your experience quick and hassle-free. Call Fairway Independent Mortgage today at 855-7-FAIRWAY or visit online at fairwayseattle.com.
Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation, NMLS 2289, Equal Housing Lender. This is not an offer to enter into an agreement. Not all customers qualify. Information, rates, and programs subject to change without notice. Products subject to credit and property approval.
The Golf Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
That's right. You're listening to The Golf Show with Jim Moore and Sean Crew here on 710 ESPN Seattle. In 10 minutes, we'll talk to Brian Flagel, the Boeing Classic Tournament Director. We'll find out about the status of the Champions Tour event at Snoqualmie Ridge in August. But right now, it's time to sweep the dial.
My goal is to make the Ryder Cup team this year at Whistling Straight. I would love to be a part of the team. And I know the following Ryder Cup in Italy, and captain, I believe, is Tiger Woods. So it's another thing that I'm looking forward to.
Is that confirmed that Tiger's going to be captain for the next one in Italy? I haven't heard that. Have I got a scoop?
I heard rumors. Okay, let me. Am I starting a rumor? Sorry. That's what I... am I not supposed to say anything? I don't know. I've heard rumors. I won't tell you who I heard it from, but that's what I heard.
If you heard it from Tiger himself, then it might be true. So.
It wasn't from him. But it was from one of his friends.
That's Kevin Na talking about Tiger Woods being the captain of the 2022 Ryder Cup team. Na will defend his championship when the PGA Tour returns June 11th through the 14th at Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth, Texas. But, Sean, I think he might have let a cat out of the bag, so to speak.
Well, and, you know, he's such a nice guy, too. So you could tell he was trying to backtrack there. You know, it's interesting. I don't know that I didn't realize they would make these announcements this early. I mean, I know they actually make a public announcement usually in February of the prior year for who's going to captain the next year. But this seems pretty early to have named someone. But, you know, what do I know? So and if it's not Tiger, who else would it be? I mean, but at this point, yeah, it's. I don't think it's impossible to think it could be Tiger. It just seems as if the announcement's fairly early.
Yeah, it is a little early, especially we're sitting here. You've got the 2020 event being held at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin, September 25th through the 27th. Tiger's currently clinging to the eighth and final spot as a player on that team. He's 44 years old now. Steve Stricker will be the captain of that Ryder Cup team. But I would think that Tiger, he's got experience from being a playing captain last year for the U.S. President's Cup team. I would think Tiger would be a heck of a captain, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to see him playing again. So if not him, the only other person I could think of that may fit the roster would be Phil Mickelson. But no, I don't think anybody would be disappointed to see Tiger in the captain spot again.
And this reminder, you can see Tiger tomorrow. He hasn't played since February, at least while we're watching on TV or in a tour event. Tiger and Peyton Manning against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. Noon tomorrow on TNT. Story number two on Sweeping the Dial. It's a golf show with Jim Moore and Sean Crew, 710 ESPN Seattle. Michael Jordan. Boy, we saw a lot of Michael Jordan. All those championships he won with the Bulls in the documentary The Last Dance on ESPN. But he's in the news for other reasons, isn't he, Sean?
He is, yeah. He actually, he's got his own golf course now. It's called the Grove 23. It's located in Hope Sound, Florida, just outside of Jupiter. He bought the land in 2015 and is the principal owner. But the big thing about it is it's ultra exclusive. It has fewer than 100 members. It's invite only. I think there might only even be 76 members, one of those being Phil Mickelson. But it just opened late last year, and it is kind of the new talk.
Yeah, Phil Mickelson will be there. And I thought it was cool. One of the things they talked about, the clubhouse, state-of-the-art, everything state-of-the-art at Michael Jordan's golf course there in Hobie Sound, Florida. But I like this double helix routing they were talking about in the story I read. And I thought, well, what the heck is double helix routing? But you can play in 4 9-hole different combinations, and you can play in 3 to 6-hole loops. So I guess it would never get boring playing the same 18 holes there at Michael Jordan's exclusive course.
No, and it sounds like there's a lot to do there as well. The 15,000-square-foot clubhouse, it sounds like it's really modern, futuristic, but the big thing is going to be whether or not you can actually just get a shot playing there.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck with that, but only 75 members. I don't think Michael Jordan, when he's on a tee box, will ever have to wait on the group in front of him. Story number three on Sweeping the Dial here on the Golf Show. The LPGA, boy, it's a tough situation for the tours. The PGA Tour is going to start their first four events, as I mentioned. The first one back, Colonial Country Club, the Charles Schwab Challenge, June 11th through the 14th. They'll be playing the first four events without fans, but it's a different story on the LPGA Tour.
Yeah, so we have been talking a lot about the men's return to the game, but the Marathon Classic, which is scheduled now for July 23rd at Highland Meadows Golf Club in Sylvania, Ohio, that one's a big question mark. It's whether or not they're actually going to even have an opportunity to play because of the fact that without them, without fans, they actually really don't have the ability to make it work. Fan attendance is a big part of their financial cost support. So what we're hearing is if they don't have fans, they may actually need to cancel the event.
Well, and we'll see what happens, too, with the Memorial, the tournament hosted by Jack Nicklaus in July there in Dublin, Ohio. There's proposals being made to the governor in Ohio to try and allow fans to these tournaments. But, boy, right now, and we'll be, I mentioned we'll be talking to Brian Flagel here in a few minutes, the tournament director at the Boeing Classic, and it's essential for a lot of these different tournaments to have fans to make it financially feasible. So it's going to be a tough navigation for all these tours to figure out what to do with the coronavirus and making sure that all the health concerns are taken care of. And it's time for story number four, and this is the one we've all been waiting for, I think. Maybe not. It's about golf push carts. They're sold out everywhere. They are just sold out everywhere, and it bums me out. You know, and I'll tell you why. Quick personal story. When my dog went blind several years ago, I was trying to take him out one night and help him out, and I forgot to shut the garage door. And that night, there was a crime spree in Renton by some kids who came around, and then they just went into my garage. Of course, I was basically welcoming them. You know, come on in if you want to steal some stuff. So they stole my Click Gear golf cart, which I really liked. And now, come to find out, Sean, if I wanted to replace my Click Gear cart, I'd have a heck of a time doing it because you can't even find any push carts because the coronavirus is making a lot of people walk these days.
Well, before this whole pandemic, I actually got a new golf cart, so if you still need one, I actually have one for you. But that is the big story now. It sounds like these push carts have become such a popular thing because now without access to caddies and the ability to use riding carts, push carts are now kind of the way to go. And so the stores are having a hard time keeping up with their inventory. Manufacturers are having a hard time keeping up with the demand. And so at this point, it sounds like this is the hot ticket. It's not just toilet paper. It's golf carts.
Yeah, it sure is. The president of Bag Boy, the model push cart company, he said the demand, it's hard to describe. And then Walker Trolley's their president, said he feels almost guilty that it's been good for us, the coronavirus. So, yeah, if you're looking for a push cart, tough to find one. A $260 Click Gear model went for $500 on Craigslist. So, yeah, I wish I'd remembered to shut my garage door, and I might have to take you up on your offer there, Sean, because I'm sure your offer includes the word free, doesn't it?
I just heard that I could make $500, actually.
You take advantage of your golf show co-host like that? Come on now. I don't think you would do that. All right. We told you that Brian Flagel is coming up next. And you might be saying, well, who's Brian Flagel? He's a really important guy. He's the Boeing Classic Tournament Director. He's a friend of the show. We look forward to talking to him. Brian Flagel. We'll talk to him next on The Golf Show with Jim Moore and Sean Crew, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The Golf Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to The Golf Show. We're joined now by Brian Flagel, the tournament director of the Boeing Classic. And Brian, thanks for carving out some time this morning for us.
Absolutely. Glad to be here, Sean and Jim, and appreciate the few minutes we can spend together.
Well, Brian, the Champions Tour event there at Snoqualmie Ridge, August 17th through the 23rd. Just wondering what the status is of the event. I know last week you told us that the event won't be held if there aren't any fans.
Yeah, the tour sort of, the Champions Tour actually has canceled everything through July now. And so the first tournament back is the first weekend in August on the Champions Tour. And they sort of made this decision for the most part that on Champions Tour events, which we totally agree, it's as much about a community event as it is about being on TV. And I think on the PGA Tour, there's certainly a lot more interest for that tour on the television, which is in ratings and all that. So that's why you'll see, as you mentioned, some of those events will go off without fans. I think on the Champions Tour, it's so much about the pro-ams and the events that are happening all week long that for the most part, the tour has made the decision now to push everything until August and let's make sure our fans and the whole experience can be out there. So I think, you know, we're still working with the county and the city and local authorities on, you know, what will happen later in August. So right now we're scheduled to be to play that 17th through the 23rd of August, but we're still sort of in a wait and see because we don't know for sure that phase four will open at the exact time if everything goes perfect. So we're a little bit in limbo at the moment, but planning on playing until we sort of hear differently that we wouldn't be able to.
Brian, the Alley Challenge is the first scheduled tournament for the PGA Tour Champions. That's happening July 27th through August 2nd at Warwick Hills. Is there an opportunity to see how these other events play out, say something to learn from them?
Well, it is, and it's a great point. So we're on a conference call every week with operations and the tournament directors of those first four or five events on the Champions Tour, kind of just picking each other's brains on what they're doing to make sure everybody is safe, which is obviously the top priority here. And so, yes, there is. There's some opportunity even on the PGA Tour. We're on calls a couple of times a week, even on with the people running the PGA Tour, as they open up, and even without fans, what they're doing and how they're handling it, and all of those types of safety issues that they're trying to go through. So, yes, there is. There's absolutely a chance to sort of learn from that. I think, you know, the difference a little bit in this is every state is different and almost every county is different across the United States. So what might be allowed one place in Ohio or in Florida may not be allowed here in King County or in Seattle. And so sometimes when we're talking, it's a little bit different in terms of what we're allowed to do versus what maybe somebody else is allowed to do.
Well, and I know the fan experience is such a big deal for the Boeing Classic, but is there any scenario where you see the tournament working without fans?
I really don't. I think, you know, there's a whole bunch of layers to that. I think as part of the Boeing Classic, the pro-ams are a major portion and kind of the base for everything else that we do, especially financially, and I'm just not sure that there's a scenario where the pro-ams can really work to our partners' satisfaction if you have to social distance and kind of that just isn't the same experience that they purchased or they've had in the past. So I would say no, Sean, I don't see us doing the event if fans aren't allowed. And I think that's the difficulty is just the uncertainty right now. Of not knowing whether or not what it will look like August 17th through 23rd and what we will be allowed to do and how much social distancing will still be in place at that point in time. So that's why it's really hard right now as we go through this process is, again, we hear different things almost every day from different, whether that's CDC or the county or the state, on what it will look like in August. And so we're just monitoring it right now and keeping an eye on things. And I would say, you know, probably sometime over the next couple of weeks, we'll have to kind of make a decision. Hey, we're either going forward and that's what we're going to do and plan on, or no, it's probably best for us to take the year off. And I think that's what we're sort of evaluating over the next few weeks right now. And as we see what opens up and what counties open up and if there is any sort of relaxation in the next few weeks on social distancing at all and that sort of thing, for particularly in King County.
Brian Flagel is the tournament director of the Boeing Classic. He's joining us now on the Golf Show with Jim Moore and Sean Cruz, 710 ESPN Seattle. The event held every year, still scheduled to be held August 17th through the 23rd at Snoqualmie Ridge. Boy, just a beautiful course up there. When you speculate, Brian, do you see a situation maybe where you'll have to limit ticket sales if fans are allowed to come? Do you see people coming with masks? What kind of speculation do you do along those lines?
I mean, I would speculate that we'll still be in, you know, some sort of social distancing and some sort of mask and that sort of thing. And so, yes, and we have played out some scenarios where, yes, we would be limiting some of the fans or where they would enter or how they get on buses and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, we sort of talked through a lot of those scenarios. I think the hard part, again, is for us is just that hasn't been on the Champions Tour the experience to be able to do that. I think all of us want to do the event and want to get back to some sort of normalcy, and it's just a matter of, you know, where is the line there? And part of that, I think, for us is we came off of such a great year last year. Certainly we had huge crowds, maybe some of the biggest ever, and, you know, Fred was in the lead, and so everybody was coming out to watch Fred, and we raised $1 million for charity, which was the most we've ever raised in the 15-year history. So we're coming off sort of a really great year, and I guess the differences probably are a little more highlighted because of that.
Well, Brian, do you have a deadline in mind on when you'll be able to make a final decision either way?
Like I said, we're talking every day. I'm speculating here a little bit, but I would say in the next couple of weeks we'll probably make that decision. That could go a little bit into June before we sort of have to. But at some point in time, I think you have to make the decision. Partly, you know, even just financially, you know, we will have to build stands and build skyboxes and all of those sorts of things, and so. Financially, there's a tipping point on when it's feasible to do it and then have the plug pulled from you, and when it's just best to say, hey, let's not, you know, take a major financial hit this year and let's take the year off. So I think that tipping point is coming up over the next few weeks. I know in talking to our operations director, we're getting close in terms of having to order some of the things that we'll need to order in order to put on the event and have fans there and all of those sorts of things. So, yeah, I guess, Sean, I'd say, yeah, probably in the next 2 weeks, I think we'll start to really hone in on, is this feasible or not? I think.
Well, Brian, thanks a lot.
Yep, no problem.
Oh, go ahead.
Yep. No, I just
okay.
Say, I
Brian Flagel.
The safety issue is the main piece, and I think that's what we just got to keep an eye on as we go through over the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Hey, Brian, really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, sounds good. That's Brian Flagel, the tournament director of the Boeing Classic. We'll see if fans will be allowed to attend the event in August. We thank you for joining us today on the Golf Show with Jim Moore and Sean Crew. Don't forget the match tomorrow, the Charity for Champions. You'll be wanting to check that out. Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady against Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning, noon tomorrow on TNT. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you next week at 9 o'clock on The Golf Show with Jim Moore and Sean Crew, 710 ESPN Seattle.